I have personal connections with Glencadam in the fact that I'm from Angus, so it was my local distillery when I grew up. However, I will be honest and say I didn't know what it was until I was old enough. God, I was probably in my early 20s when I knew it existed. but that's because people just didn't know Glencadam Distillery. So there's a personal tie there. But I think as a blender, what I love about Glencadam is it's a really distinctive spirit. So as a whiskey blender, I deal with probably, 60 or 70 different distilleries quite regularly as part of our blend recipes and different styles outside of our single malts, of course. But Glencadam is really distinctive.
We are Miriam,
Martin,
and Manuel. We love Scotland, travelling and whiskey.
On our trips, we talk to the people to bring their stories to you and to share our love for the water of life.
This is Inside Whiskey, the Barrel Talk. Today, we're at Glencadam Distillery in Brecon in Angus on the east coast of Scotland. And sitting next to us is Ian Fortieth, Master Blender and Global Brand Ambassador for Angus Dundee Distillers, who own Glencadam Distillery. Welcome to the podcast, Ian.
It's a pleasure to be here.
No, thank you for having us. And now, first question. Last year, you celebrated 10 years or your 10th anniversary at Angus Dundee Distillers. How did you celebrate?
I actually drank Glencadam 25-year-old, which is one of my old favourites. I didn't create the recipe for Glencadam 25, but it's one of my favourite whiskies in our whole lineup. I had a few good drams, to be fair, but I opened a bottle of Glencadam 25-year-old as a bit of a treat. So
yeah, and you don't celebrate a decade with just one drum.
So. No, in fact, to be fair, Tom and Tal 5 decades was also in the mix, although I've only done 1 decade so far. But yes, no, I had a chance to have a few drams with some good friends, and the good news is most of them like whiskey, so I could share a few good bottles.
That's amazing. And before we talk about the Ian that we have here today, let's talk about how you got into whiskey. So can you maybe tell us how your whiskey journey started?
Yeah, so I've been fascinated with whiskey since I was very young. I had my first taste of whiskey when I was a bit older. but I've always found it quite an interesting kind of bond in society, which sounds very philosophical. But my dad and my granddad were big whiskey fans. Mm-hmm. So my dad always had a selection of drams in the house. My granddad was a big whiskey drinker as well. When I say a big drinker, I mean he wasn't excessively drinking, but whiskey was always there. So they were from the east coast of Fife, and whiskey played a very important part of any kind of social gathering. So whether it was celebrating, commiserating, there was always a bottle of whiskey. And I remember a coming of age moment when I was invited to join the men to go for a dram. That's not being exclusive or excluding ladies, but they were kind of, old style Scottish, I guess. So my gran drank sherry and my granddad drank whiskey. And at Christmas time, all the men in the family would kind of have a few drams before Christmas dinner. And I remember, again, I'll say 18 for legal reasons, but when I was old enough to be invited, I felt very proud to be invited to join the men for a whiskey. Did I like it? No. but I drank it all the same because I felt I had to. But since then, I really got into it.
Yeah. We looked at your Instagram profile, which is at Scotch Voyager, and there is even a picture of you as a baby smelling an old bottle of Tobermory, I think. So as you already said, that your family always was around whiskey, or is that just the coincidence that you had a Tobermory there?
So yeah, that picture was more of a coincidence. I remember when I was promoted to Master Blender in 2021, my parents sent me a picture of that picture, which is pretty funny. So yeah, I think my dad's always been a fan for like kind of a funny snapshot with babies. I now have 2 children of my own, and there's a few pictures of them kind of holding things that I suppose children maybe shouldn't hold, various bottles. But yeah, the Tobermory one was a bit of a cracker. So yeah, I think it suited the mood of I never intended to work in the whiskey industry, but I guess I maybe started young.
And your kids are not old enough, just old enough for the pictures, not old enough for the whiskey.
Very much so. So my son, my eldest is 3 and my youngest is 8 months old. So not quite whiskey fans yet.
Not quite yet. Yeah.
Although having a whiskey bar is obviously an occupational hazard of working in the industry, and my sons do really like looking at the back bar. If my youngest son Lucas is crying, I tend to take him, it's kind of backlit, and I'll look at the different labels, so he finds all the bottles quite fascinating. But I hope it's kind of, if you educate them young, then they won't go stealing it when they're older.
Fingers crossed.
So moving forward from your youth to now being actually a master blender, was that always the goal for you, or did it evolve over time?
I mean, yeah, so whiskey was never really a career choice for me. It wasn't really the plan, but it's been great. I've always appreciated whiskey, as I mentioned, and I think for me, I kind of went down the more traditional path of, you know, go to university, do a degree, try and get a job in that degree. My degree is geography and environmental science. It's great. I can tell you where I am on a map. and I didn't really enjoy my course, but my job doesn't really have anything to do with either of those. So no, I mean, working in whiskey was an exciting, different change of career path. And then as a big whiskey geek, to then kind of transition into blending and now kind of heading up as master blender, it's a bit of a dream come true, but not a dream I thought was attainable, I guess. and I do pinch myself when I'm tasting whiskey. Yeah, on the regular. I taste whiskey every day. I get privileged to try some absolutely crazy bottles of and crazy casks of things that I would have never have dreamed of tasting when I was in my 20s. And yeah, but it's a privilege. But a privilege I like to share with people as well. It's not just, I don't hoard it all to myself.
And you said it before, it's not really a career path that you learn about in school, because for us, not being from Scotland, we always think like, oh, whiskey must be on their mind constantly, like working in whiskey and so on. But you said it's not the case.
Yes. Yeah, so I would say Scotch is criminally underrated in Scotland. it's something they just don't tell you about in schools. So although it's the second biggest export of our country, because it's alcohol, it's kind of seen as taboo. So children don't know about it. And I understand from a drinking perspective, but yeah. Actually as an industry and as a heritage as well, it's crazy that we don't really talk about it. So if you come from a whiskey producing region in Scotland, like Speyside or Islay, you often have relatives who maybe work in distilling. But I'm the first of my family to work in whiskey. And I didn't even know it was really a career choice until falling into it really by accident.
And now you even have a double role. You're the master blender and the brand ambassador at the same time. Which part do you find harder?
Ooh. So I was global brand ambassador in Angus & Dee as my starting title. So that's what I began doing with the company. So I guess I've kind of done that role for the longest. Master blender, I guess, there's more technical elements to being a master blender. And that's no disrespect to Cody, our global brand ambassador, because our brand ambassadors do a very hard job as well. But no, I think that being a brand ambassador is the challenges of that is the hard travel, but also you have to be kind of aware and conscious and kind of presentable, as well as being kind of personal 24/7, so you don't get any off time, which is brilliant, but it's intense. A classic example of that is the Viking Line, the Cinderella Cruise Whiskey Festival. I don't know if you've heard of this, which is kind of a coming of age for brand ambassadors. So it's a 3-day whiskey cruise that you do in Sweden, and it's brilliant. And if anyone is listening has been on it's fantastic. And if you haven't, it's really an experience to try. However, you have a different crowd every 24 hours. So the ship departs, it goes to international waters, and you're on a floating whiskey festival. But if you're a brand ambassador or a brand representative there, you're doing that 3 days for 24 hours. And literally the only time you have to yourself is to sleep. And it's a really good way to know what it's like as a brand ambassador both ways. It's good fun, but actually it takes a lot.
I mean, it's a job. It has to be not just fun. Right?
Yeah, the pros always outweigh the cons in whiskey. I would say that. But traveling is brilliant, but it also comes with lots of time waiting in airports, lots of lost luggage. And the same, so blending is a dream come true. It's brilliant fun, but it also has a lot of admin. So it's not, I think a lot of people think of the master blenders just sit in a lab and drink the most expensive and luxurious Scotch whiskies in the world. It's everything from everyday blended whiskies up to super premium. But we don't just go into warehouses and drink all the best stuff. We do taste it all. not just all the most expensive and rarest ones.
Of course not. And what is the one thing that still excites you the most after a decade in the business? The one thing you wake up in the morning and think, this is great.
I love that every day is different. You guys have had the pleasure of doing a tour with me earlier. Yep. You'll know that my mind shoots off on random tangents and I'm easily distracted by things because there's so much going on. I'm doing myself a disservice here, but I get the whole industry stimulates and excites me because there's so much going on. And I think that even in my day job, so in a lab, in blending, I'm working on a different project every day. So every, it's all whiskey, but every project is different. Every flavor is different. Every challenge or every opportunity is different. Sometimes it's recreating existing brands. Sometimes it's trying to match a sample blend. Sometimes it's creating entirely new recipes. And that varies day on day and week on week. So although it's all blending, it's all different. And sometimes it's doing masterclasses. Sometimes it's doing podcasts with lovely folks like yourselves. I love the variety. I think that's what keeps me interested. It's not just the same thing day in, day out. It's a really big variety of of tasks and yeah, and experiences.
That's cool. And we want to focus on Glencadam Distillery. So first question about Glencadam. What does Glencadam actually mean?
Glencadam has, so I was checking, I don't know if they mentioned this in the tour. So Glencadam has quite a funny name. So Glen is a valley, as you may know. Mm-hmm. So in the whiskey world, you've got kind of Glenfiddich, Valley of the Deer, Glengoyne, Valley of the Geese. Mm-hmm. Glen is Cadam's part. So Cadam is an abbreviation of Caldhame, which is cold houses. So Glencadam is Valley of the Cold Houses.
Oh, romantic.
It's been changed over time. So yeah, but we did a bit of digging into this. But yeah, so Glen Caldhame, I think, is the twist. So Cadam has become like an anglicized version. So yeah, as far as we know, I think it's Valley of the Cold Houses.
Well, I can attest to the coldness outside.
It is a bit chilly out there, yeah.
So maybe let's zoom out and talk about the distillery of the cold houses a little. Glencadam has been producing whiskey since 1825, I think, and witnessing an enormous shift in the industry from like blending to more recent, the single malt boom, I suppose. When you walk through the distillery nowadays, which you did with us already, where do you feel that history most strongly?
I think when you get into the production area of the distillery, so when you're in the still house, or even just transitioning from the kind of mash room or the kind of washbacks heading down, it's very compact, which I kind of love. So I think the distillery itself, it's a contrast in terms of we have a kind of modern visitor experience. But once you actually get into the stillhouse, you can see kind of the age. I think the thick stone walls and the low ceiling height is a big part of it. But yeah, but it feels rustic once you get inside it. And everything from the sights to the smells, I think it's all part of it, really.
Yeah, I love it. And we got to experience it firsthand as well. So for people not having visited Glencadam Distillery, could you walk us briefly through the distillery and maybe also through your production process? Because the setup we've seen is pretty traditional.
Yeah, so we're still a fully manual distillery, which is pretty cool. We don't have our own maltings anymore because a large commercial maltster opened up on our doorstep. So that kind of wound up, I think it was in the 50s or 60s. But other than that, the whole process is manual. We grind our own grist in our Porteous Patent Mill, which is over 100 years old. We then take that to our kind of traditional style mash tun. So we've got a stirring gear style mash tun. So deep bed mashing. Then we're trying to bring things, I guess, back to more of the 1825 style as well. So we've replaced our stainless steel washbacks with wooden ones, which you got to see the shiny new washbacks. So that, I guess that process is following traditional style fermentation, although that's kind of a newer process. I guess we're still in the stages of phasing those through. So yeah, that's giving you the right kind of walk through to begin with. So the initial stages, you kind of, the way that the distillery flows, you follow the steps as you go, although it's all up and downstairs. So milling to mashing to fermentation, and then you head down the stairs to the stillhouse. As you saw, if you're a virtual tour, as I'm giving you by audio, when you go down to the stillhouse, we have something quite unique, which is we have an internal working water wheel, which we reinstated back in 2021.
So, and it's massive, you have to say that. It's not just like a tiny water wheel, but it's like, I don't know, 5 meters in diameter or something.
Yeah, I think it's 16 feet in diameter, yeah. So whatever that is in meters is about, yeah, five something. Five something. Yeah, it's huge. So we recreated it based on the original that would have powered the distillery in 1825. And again, it's kind of part of that heritage. So Glencadam, although it's not a distillery that everybody's heard of, it's had quite a major part to play in the whiskey industry in the last 200 years. You've probably come across spirits that have had Glencadam in them, even if it's in blended whiskies. I think that, so bringing some of that history back is quite a nice nod to the past. So we've got the water wheel that you walk past, and then you end up down in our stillhouse, where you see our pretty unique shaped stills that have created the kind of signature style Glencadam for all these years. I guess in terms of flavor differentiation, so I didn't really speak about the different steps, but we're doing an 8-hour mash cycle, roughly a 48 plus hour fermentation. For whiskey geeks, which I mean very endearingly out there that are listening, we don't do secondary ferment or long fermentation, but I promise you that's not a bad thing. It's just different. So if you go for a super long fermentation, which has become a bit of a go-to now, a bit of a hype. Lots of questions are always asked about our fermentation times. And it depends on the style of whiskey you're trying to create. So Glencadam's profile is that kind of yellow fruit, sweet estuary character. but it's not the kind of red fruit kind of lactone driven ester style that you would get from a long fermentation. So we are often critiqued like, oh, you only did 48 hours, but I promise it tastes okay. So we're going for this kind of fresh yellow fruit, tropical fruit style, estery wash. And then after that, we're going to our stills. And our stills are where things get a bit different. So Glencadam has quite a unique still shape, as you got to see. So they're quite short stills, but they sort of work like tall stills. And they do that by being quite narrow at the necks. But most importantly, they have inclined line arms. So your standard still shape is kind of onion shaped. You've got your kind of bulb base, your neck that comes off the top, and then your line arm tends to go down at a decreased angle. But at Glencadam, they incline quite significantly. And as such, it forces the spirit vapor to try and travel upwards, which vapor doesn't like to do, you know. It likes to condense and cool. So as the vapor is pushed upwards in these inclined line arms, it ends up condensing and cooling in the arm, or a lot of it does, and creating a process called reflux. So that's when it kind of condenses into a liquid again, falls back down into the still, and then kind of repeats this process. And that gives the liquid lots and lots of contact with copper. So as I was describing to you, I think that's Glencadam, although it's not long fermentation, is a very estery spirit. And it does that by kind of amplifying those esters during this refluxing distillation. Yeah, it's cool. So the end result after your primary and secondary distillation is you get a kind of a spirit that's got a really interesting mouthfeel, but very tropical, bright flavor characteristics as well. So it's a really nice mix of fruity, but with a lot of presence and body as well.
And maybe one fun fact on the stills, there was a naming competition. Can you maybe tell us about that?
Yes. So we recently replaced, I'm trying to remember what date it was, whenever Game of Thrones was popular, is the precursor to the story. But so we had a naming competition. We had the spirit still at Glencadam was replaced. And when we replaced it, we had this shiny new copper still. And we thought we'd run a competition with Glencadam fans to let them name the new still. So we had lots of entries, things from the Stilly McStillface, which I don't know if you heard the story of Boaty McBoatface. Same kind of time. So that'll tell you which section of time it was. My favorite was the Glencadam Juice Master 5000.
That's my favorite by far.
I'm gutted we never used that one. I thought it was great. But the winner by public vote was A Still Has No Name. Which was it was relevant when Game of Thrones was relevant and big. Nowadays, we mention it and people don't really understand why we're telling them the name is that it still has no name. So now we just call it a spirit still again.
You can still swap to the Juice Master.
I mean, hopefully. I think we should swap back. Maybe we can turn the wash still into the Juice Master 3000 and then the Juice Master 5000 for, it sounds like a super soaker brand. It is, still has no name. Someone did win a bottle of Glencadam for naming that. So if they are listening, I apologize. Your naming was great. So that was by public vote. If anything, it taught us a lesson is don't ask the public too many things. No, I'm joking.
Now, before we talk more about visiting the distillery and casks and so on, let's maybe start at an earlier stage, because water needs to come from somewhere. And we've heard there's also a specialty about the water at Glencadam, the water source.
Yes, so our water sources, it's either the furthest or one of the furthest piped in water sources for distilling. So Glencadam is based in a really cool old town called Brechin. It actually used to be the smallest city in Scotland once upon a time. But then they changed the category that qualified to make a city a city. And then they kind of took the name away from Brechin, which some of the locals are quite bitter about. So Brechin City Football Club is still the name, but Brechin is now classified as a town. But it's had historical importance for a long time. If you get a chance, there's a really nice cathedral here and some really nice historic old buildings. But as the town has grown, the original Victorian water source for the town was no longer needed. They moved on to a different reservoir. And as such, we're now the sole users of the old town's water source. So the reservoir that used to feed the whole town of Brechin now feeds the whole of Glencadam. But it is about 8 miles away. our water comes in from a fair distance. It comes from the Angus Glens. So you probably drove through them on the way here. It's a very beautiful part of the world. So it comes in from a fair trek. It's not just on the doorstep, unfortunately.
No, but I mean, you can still use it, and it's good that you still use the water that was used for the whole city of Brechin.
Historically, the reason Glencadam's where it is because we're very close to the River North Esk. So we had a water source on our doorstep. Nowadays, you don't tend to take water straight from a moving river source. just because of disruption to flow and fish and these kind of things. So that's kind of changed to be a reservoir instead of the river. But if you've drank the tap water, which we're having just now, then that's the same water that's going through our cells. So.
That's lovely. You walked us through the production process, and you touched upon having wooden wash bags now. So you changed some little parts, but is there one thing you would point out that you'd never dare to change in the distillery?
Ooh, that is a good one. I guess the still shape. Within whiskey, I mean, so as a blender, a lot of the flavor that I kind of add or create to whiskey is done through the use of casks. And the longer you store a whiskey in a cask, obviously the more characteristic it lends to the end whiskey. But in terms of physical distillation and how to shape a spirit, the stills and the distillation is the most important part of all the stages I mentioned. Every stage plays an important part. So you've got your mashing and your fermentations, etc. But yeah, I guess if you change the still shape or you change the distillation style, that would change the whole kind of DNA of Glencadam. So yes, I wouldn't really change the stills.
I can see that, yeah. But another thing you actually did change was adding a new visitor center to your existing distillery. Why was 25 the right time to open that visitor center?
I was going to say a bad joke and say, because it doesn't edit the spirit character. 2025 was the 200th anniversary of Glencadam Distillery. And I think that it's not every day you celebrate two centuries. We had, what was a shame really when we were talking earlier about my 10th anniversary in the industry is really, it pales into insignificance when, so Tom and Tal turned 60 last year, our sister distillery, Glencadam turned 200. So my 10 year anniversary was nothing in the grand scale. So yeah, so for part of that, I think because it's been an integral part of the town, but a part that people didn't really know, we really wanted to bring Glencadam to the world. So I think 2025 is the perfect time to open the doors. As you've seen, we try to keep it true to the distillery style. We're quite kind of, yeah, under the radar is a nice way to be. And even the I think the experience is nice, and it does good credit to the distillery, but it's not too loud or garish. I think that trying to in keeping with the distillery style. And so it's lovely to show people what Glencadam's all about, share our pretty amazing history. And the term they use a lot is this resilient spirit. I mean, there's not many distilleries that have existed for 200 years and remained a similar sort of size as well. We have two stills. We're not one of these kind of modern distilleries that have expanded into massive production. That's no slight on them. They make amazing whiskey also. But many of the other distilleries that are still alive or still going from the 1820s are now mega giants, whereas Glencadam isn't. It's still kind of small and quaint. It's kept its head above the water all this time, but it's also not turned into this kind of super factory of a distillery.
And before we continue on visitor experience, looking at the distillery as a whiskey producing distillery, there's also the cafe, and we just had lunch there, and it seems that there are many people also from here, locals are coming. So was that the intention?
Yeah, I think it's nice to be part of the town. As you saw on the drive in here, so Glencadam is literally in the town. It's not it's not on the outskirts. We're surrounded. We've got houses, and on some sides there's a graveyard around the corner. But we're off the main road, and we are part of the town, and always have been for the last 200 years. So I think being able to let the public come in and see it is quite nice. Also, as we all know about towns and things as well, there's not always a big draw of things to do. So it's nice to have a cafe. And even if people aren't whiskey fans, it's nice to show them what Glencadam's about, what this distillery that makes the town known to the world. Because people in Germany probably don't know kind of where Brieken is on a map.
To be very honest, we didn't even know how to pronounce it until yesterday. So we were like, what is it? Brieken?
Well, I have a funny story about this, actually. Not to jump onto a different tangent, but so Gordon Ramsay,
the chef,
was recently on television talking about Brieken. And it was the biggest exposure Brieken's ever had to the world, because Glencadam's well known, but Gordon Ramsay's slightly better known than we are. And he called it Brieken. And he's like, oh, it's my ancestral home of Brieken. And I'm like, no. The locals were very upset because no one's ever called Brieken Brieken. But he told the world that it was called Brieken. Anyway, I digress. But that was the Brieken's one big break, and it was said in the wrong way. But I think that's the thing. So if you see a bottle of our whiskey on a shelf in Germany or in Belgium or in Taiwan, and you see the word Brieken on it, I mean, kind of, no one's going to know where that is, but actually, kind of, if you can bring people to the cafe and show them the town and show them a bit more about it, it's a nice way to kind of give provenance to where we are. It's an old agricultural kind of heartland for Scotland. Angus in general is a really kind of fertile part of the northeast of Scotland, and it used to be home to several distilleries. So part of our experience is also giving homage to that. It's the kind of the region that no longer is, I guess. Speyside became the kind of the glamorous whiskey distilling region where all the distilleries set up, and when that really took off, a lot of the Angus distilleries were kind of left behind. So it's nice to still kind of to hang in there and show them what we could do too.
Yeah, and now that people can come here and have whiskey experiences at the distillery, what are the whiskey experiences like here?
I mean, I'm biased, but they're pretty good.
No. First, okay, before you're biased, what can people do without any bias? And then you can be biased.
So there's a few different tour options you can do. So our standard tour takes you through the interactive experience and then a visit through the distilleries and a few drams in the warehouse. And then we have a tasting room also where you can try a few others. We also have like a kind of VIP tour experience you can do with the tour center manager. And that's a way to get more in depth and try some more special whiskies, I guess, as well. And as you saw, we also are developing a kind of a special area in Warehouse 2A, which is our 200-year-old Dunge warehouse, for kind of unique sampling opportunities as well. So
it smells lovely in there.
It's not a bad smell. I wish I could bottle that as a cologne. So I think there's tiers for all brackets. And much like you were saying about the cafe, I mean, some people don't like whiskey. Some people aren't interested in drinking whiskey.
Which is okay.
I can let them off. I mean, I might not be their friend, but I can let them off. But I think that... but even then, so you can do a tour if you're interested. You can also just have a nice coffee in the cafe and look at the site and things. So it's got everything from introductory tours up to letting kind of whiskey fans really get into the heart of Glencadam as well. So there's something for everybody, I guess.
And maybe one thing, because we went to the warehouses and you said the smell is nice and everything. And for people coming to the distilleries, the warehouse is usually like the heart of the distillery. The whiskey's there, you want to drink it. Are there any plans for warehouse tastings as well? I know it's complicated sometimes with the warehouse, but...
Yes, so the warehouse tastings are all good as long as you can have your casks duty paid.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part that no one sees, because I guess when we do tours, especially if we have groups or maybe whiskey clubs that come across, everyone wants to do a warehouse tasting. But technically, if I pull you a sample from a cask that hasn't been duty paid, I'm kind of breaking the law. So we try not to do that. So in the warehouse tasting experience, the best ones are when you have a selection of casks that have been duty paid as such. So mm-hmm. The plan for the vault that you saw in Warehouse 2A, that is to do cask tasting. So we'll have a selection of casks there that people can sample and try, because there's nothing quite like drinking whiskey from a cask.
True.
Well, I'm actually looking forward to that. But until then, people should really experience that tour that we got, because it is way different than usual tours. It is very immersive. And then you have your traditional tour afterwards. So I can only recommend that. And
thank you.
Maybe for people coming to the area of Angus, there is the new attraction in the area with your visitor center. But apart from a visit at the Glencadam Distillery, what else can people do here?
So Angus it's home to great produce. So there's some really good restaurants here. So really good kind of cattle farming. So some really good places to eat, drink. The other thing is it's pretty famous for golf. So Carnoustie is an open championship golf course. It's actually pretty close to here. We have really good ties with the Carnoustie Hotel. In fact, there's a Glencadam suite there. So if you're into golf, you can double up. You can do Glencadam and maybe try and get yourself around at Carnoustie. But other than that, fishing as well. So the Esk is good for salmon fishing. So there's more than just whiskey here, but obviously, main attraction.
Can we go fishing at the distillery as well?
And the carp in the coolant ponds, maybe. I mean, there are a good number of grass carp and ghost carp there. But the North Esk, is quite a famous salmon river. And the other thing is Brechin Castle is on our doorstep as well. So there's an old baronial castle there. And then there's kind of good kind of castle ruins as well. Glam's Castle is an ex-royal castle as well. So there's a bit of history, a bit of whiskey, some nice food.
Food and golf. Perfect.
Yeah, sorted. Yeah.
Sounds like a good time for me.
Yeah.
So now let's get to, I suppose, the most important part, the whiskey itself. You already touched on it when producing the spirit. How would you describe the Glencadam's flavor profile?
Yeah, I think... what excites me as a blender about Glencadam, and I always try to think of this answer because I have personal connections with Glencadam in the fact that I'm from Angus, so it was my local distillery when I grew up. However, I will be honest and say I didn't know what it was until I was old enough. God, I was probably in my early 20s when I knew it existed. but that's because people just didn't know Glencadam Distillery. So there's a personal tie there. But I think as a blender, what I love about Glencadam is it's a really distinctive spirit. So as a whiskey blender, I deal with probably, 60 or 70 different distilleries quite regularly as part of our blend recipes and different styles outside of our single malts, of course. But Glencadam is really distinctive. So it's this style of spirit, which is old school but modern, which sounds weird as a style, but it's very bright and it's very fresh. But it's got this really nice complexity to it. And the reason I say it's old school is because it's a manual style spirit from a very old distillery. But the flavor profile it gives would make you think more of a modern style, I guess. So it's this mixture of kind of tangy tropical fruits, citrus. There's a lovely kind of oiliness to the mouthfeel. There's a creamy character there. It's got a nice long finish as well. It's got a good kind of cling. Because of that viscosity, it kind of sticks to your teeth. It sticks to the back of your mouth when you're drinking it. So it gives you a nice kind of warming, cozy finish. So it gives you this lovely brightness, but this really nice kind of body and complexity at the same time. So kind of fruity, crisp, and a little bit kind of cozy is the best way I'd describe Glencadam.
We've tried the 10-year today, and I would say that I actually found those flavors that you just described to us in that 10-year.
But thank you.
How do those flavors evolve throughout your core range then?
Yeah, so a lot of the core range in Glencadam, because of this kind of bright and fruity profile, we use a lot of bourbon casks. We use a lot of ex-American oak, and it develops really well in American oak. It suits lots of cask types, but we do most of our initial maturation, at least, in American oak casks. So as it develops, it kind of changes and oxidizes over time. So in the 10-year-old, to stick to bourbon casks for the meantime, the 10-year-old has got this lovely, bright, tangy tropical fruit character, and a nice kind of vanilla background there from the bourbon casks. When you try the 15-year-old, which is also all bourbon cask, the 15-year-old is a much fuller bodied style. So we ramp up the first fill. So this is fresh fill bourbon casks as the ratio. So all of them use a mixture of first fill, second fill, and third fill. And that relates to how many times that bourbon barrel has been used for scotch. For the 15-year-old, we ramp up the first fill. You get 5 more years of aging, of course. But actually, it changes the profile. So it goes from being this tangy tropical style to being more like a thick custardy kind of apple pie, apple strudel sort of thing. So there's still that citrus note, but it's actually got more of like a spiced fruit character. So I think, East Coast style. So you still get the tropical fruits to a degree, but most of it becomes, I say, it becomes more like a kind of spiced apple, cooked apple sort of character. Then when you go to the 18, the 18 is more of a mimic of the 10, so slightly less first fill. And the 18 shows you more spirit-driven style again, but it's obviously 18 years old at this point, so you get like an oxidative style. So the 18 Glencadam tastes like tinned peaches and apricots. You get this really nice stone fruit character. So again, it's always this fruit-driven core, but the fruits change. So it goes from this kind of tropical fruit, spiced apples and cooked fruits, then more of a stone fruit note. And that gives you this kind of really nice velvety character. The vanillin and vanilla notes of the bourbon cask start to kind of change a bit as well. They become almost like ginger biscuits and nutmeg. It's great. And then at the moment, the 21's out of stock, but there was a 21-year-old once upon a time in the range. We'll hopefully bring that back at some stage. that was more like the 15, so more robust again. So that was more like kind of honeycomb and kind of fruit pudding. And then finally, in the kind of core range, if you get a chance to try, which I'll try and pour you a dram later, we have the 25, which for me is it sings. The 25 is second fill and refill casks. Super spirit forward, but it's really clean, super elegant. It's like poached pears and kind of creme anglaise. It's awesome. Not the oldest whiskey is always the best. I feel that I made that sound like you should always just jump straight to the 25. They're all beautiful in their own range, but for the kind of bourbon cask selections in Glencadam, that's the kind of the way the flavors transition and change.
All of them sound absolutely fabulous, and we're looking forward to try them later on. Before we now jump to more special releases, there's one thing, because we were talking about changes beforehand. So one thing you've actually changed is your packaging. Why?
I think it was a mixture of trying to make Glencadam a bit more distinctive, while also bringing it back to its heritage. I like the old style bottle of Glencadam also, but it is quite old school, and it's also not necessarily a unique bottle mold, so that's a kind of standard bottle, albeit with some Glencadam embossing. There was always a drive to try and, I guess with the 200th anniversary as well, to try and kind of bring Glencadam to be a bit more distinctive on the back bar. So when you see it now, the kind of the font has gone from being vertical to horizontal, which makes it a bit easier to read. But also they made it into to being a bit more true to the distillery. So the water wheel that you guys saw on the tour is a big part and quite a unique feature of Glencadam. So they've kind of made that part of the bottle mold. So you see the base of the bottle has a water wheel embossed in it now, which is quite cool. And then the label and the design on the tube wrap as well kind of shows the distillery in process. So they had an illustrator, a very famous illustrator who also did the Harry Potter books. he did a design of Glencadam kind of based on 1825. So they tried to bring back a bit of heritage there.
So modern heritage kind of.
Modern heritage. So it looks clearer, but it's also got a bit of more tie to the distillery style. As mentioned, I don't work in marketing, so they would do a better justice of
it.
But
it's just still very interesting to understand, like, why does Glencadam take the decision and how far does it develop kind of together with the whiskey?
Yeah, I think it's one of these things that so my job is always to create the liquid. So as long as the liquid's good, that's me done my part. And I think if the people are resistant to change, and I don't mean that as a slight, and it's always that thing when you rebrand, when any distillery rebrands, there's always a bit of kind of chaos in the mix when people start panicking because they really like the old brand. I think generally feedback's been very good. But it's hard as someone who's worked for the company for so long when you see someone kind of negatively talking about the bottle. I think that people, when they see it and feel it, tend to really love it. And it's a bit more classy. It's a bit more tactile in its new format. But I know that people get attached to the old style too. So it's been interesting to see it change. But I think it is for the better, really. And I think when people see it and get the chance to see kind of touch it and feel it, it's a nice bottle. The one thing I do like, and I do... standby is that it didn't come with a price increase, which is one of these things that normally the double whammy for whiskey fans is that the packaging changes and it also goes up in price by a few pounds. Yeah. We didn't do that at all. So the packaging has changed, but the liquid and the bottles cost the same as they did in the old packaging.
That's good. And now let's jump back to the liquid. You said it, you're a liquid guy. Mm-hmm. So when we look at the special releases or single cask releases, I think you're the one to taste them and to decide. How do you decide? What is it that tells you, oh, this one needs to go out?
Yeah, I think it's finding that sweet spot, or that balance between spirit and cask is a really important thing. Because I think that whiskey styles, it's easy to kind of drown out a distillery DNA with casks. Because especially full flavored and powerful casks, you know, you can often end up making a delicious whiskey, but it can sometimes lose that house style. And if people are picking up a bottle of Glencadam, they're doing it because they know the house style and they know the spirit profile of Glencadam. So for us, it's finding that harmony, that sweet spot between the cask being very expressive and getting the best from that barrel, mm-hmm. or that barrique or that hogshead or that kind of butt, whatever it may be, but also being able to still say, yeah, this is Glencadam spirit and this cask type. So my role in blending, my kind of primary role before I was master blender, was looking at new wood types. So I did a lot of experimentation with different casks. I've been going to France and to Spain and places to source new types of whiskey barrels, new types of barrels to use for our whiskey. And what's been interesting is seeing the different development rates as well. So not every cask follows a set profile. We can't just say, okay, yep, we'll finish that for 2 years and then we'll do that one for 2 years and vice versa. Every cask sings at a different time. So sometimes they're really good after 18 months, sometimes they're really good after 12 months, sometimes they take 3 or 4 years. It just depends on the cask and, yeah, being able to then decide, yeah, this is the time to take it out and to release it into market.
You just said that you like finishing your spirit in maybe different wood types, and I suppose that is not something that has been done here at Glencadam before much. So you had to have new relationships with cask suppliers. How do you engage with them? How do you begin new relationships?
Yeah, so my kind of transition into the whiskey world, I guess, I was originally a wine guy. So I trained in wine. I was a wine specialist. And something I took with me from my wine days was my kind of little black book of contacts. So something I've been doing a lot is working with smaller kind of suppliers that I know and really love for their wines or their sherries or their ports, whatever it may be, and bringing over small parcels of really interesting stock. So yeah, so a lot of that was kind of approaching suppliers of spirits or not spirits, but kind of products that I knew and really enjoyed the quality of, and then being able to use those casks for our spirit and for our whiskies. So that's part of the supply side. So Glencadam didn't have any other cask finishes other than Oloroso and port. When I joined the company and when I got into blending, it was myself that was the first person to kind of go out and trial new cask types. And it was a directive of the company to see what else we can do with our flavors. As a blender, it's funny. So our job in blending, whether it's myself or my kind of colleagues and counterparts in different companies, our job is creating flavor with mm-hmm. distillate. So we don't get to play around with the distilling side. In fact, we're very much discouraged from it. But the way you can change in shape and alter flavor is either through maturation and cask selection or through different casks and finishing. And I guess we're always curious to see what else we can do. So trying new types of casks, bringing in new flavors onto our spirits, while also staying true to the house style, as you mentioned before. It's a really fun part of the job, I guess, and trying these different things and seeing what they do with Glencadam.
If you get into your office on a day where you got new samples, is there a special kind of cask finish you're always looking forward to dry? Is there one you say that is the one wood type to make Glencadam spirit really shine?
There's a couple, but that's a really good question, to be fair. I would say that all of our interaction with Sauterne casks have been brilliant so far, and they really, really work. I guess the spirit by design is quite fruity, and you get that lovely kind of elegant fruity character. When you marry that with a Sauterne, you get really nice complexities and kind of exotic spices and things that come into the whiskey. So it works really well. The other one that I absolutely love is Calvados, which we may have just released. but we did our first trials with Calvados. I'm trying to remember when we did it. It was only legalized recently, and I bought them pretty much as soon as we were told we were allowed to do it by the SWA. But I used to have holidays in Normandy when I was a kid and a teenager, and I remember Calvados really well. I got to know some really cool Calvados suppliers. Just as a kind of, they're kind of a village style industry. So you get every farmer in Normandy has their own Calvados, either their own stills or they've got their own kind of supply from someone.
Or so legal, always, of course.
But I think so. I mean, yeah. I mean, to be fair, I tried some pretty awful stuff, but most of it was lovely. but the ones we bought were from commercial distilleries. But I think, but Calvados is a flavor I've always really liked. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, the Glencadam 15-year-old is apple pie is something I get a lot from the literal tasting notes of that stock. So when you combine that with an apple brandy cask, it works really well. We've trialed it with both distilleries, but Glencadam and Calvados particularly is an absolute sweet spot. And we've got a few different ages that are still maturing, but the 17-year-old is the one we've just brought out. And yeah, it's a cask type I really enjoy, mainly because who doesn't like desserts? And it tastes like a warm apple pie.
Yeah.
sounds actually really lovely. And looking back at your 10 years, as you already said, you're really proud of your Calvados finish, for example. Is there a whiskey that stands out to you, which you say, oh, that's my baby, that's what I'm really proud of?
It's funny because there's been so many now, and I don't mean that as a brag, but I guess there's recipes. It's funny, so the industry moves so fast, but so slow at the same time. So what I mean by that is maturing casks can't mature fast enough, because 2 years doesn't sound that much on paper, but actually when you filled that cask and then you have to wait 24 months, it's a long time to wait. But when it comes around, it's amazing. And when you get when you get the praise and release after these releases, when you get kind of people's feedback and you see that they love them, it's wonderful. But it's fast because there's always a new product to work on. So I guess for Glencadam, so my first recipe for Glencadam Distillery was, my first recipe as a blender for Glencadam was the re-release of Glencadam 15-year-old. And that was because there's a 3-year production gap between 2000 and 2003. Mm-hmm. And I had been blending with the company for a while at this point. And I remember them giving me the honor, I guess, but also the kind of big task of saying, right, can you come up with the next blend for Glencadam 15? I guess that one was interesting because it was a sample match style. So obviously I didn't want to change the recipe, but we had to use the stock that we had from 2003 rather than what we had pre Angus Dundee takeover of Glencadam. But I also know that it's a lot of people's all-time favorite Glencadam, so there was a lot of pressure to make sure that we kept it. That we kept it tight. And the good news is people still love it. So that was my first release in terms of just working with Glencadam spirit. My first recipe was Glencadam Reserve Andalusia, so that was the first time I got to create my own style of Glencadam outside of the kind of recreating and helping recreate the existing drams. I guess Reserva PX has been really highly praised. It does really well in Germany as well, mm-hmm. and really well in Europe. So it's the purple labeled Glencadam is a better one to describe it as. But that was a recipe I worked on for a long time, and to see people absolutely loving that dram. The feedback on that online is very heartwarming because lots of people go to it as their under £50 kind of go to whiskey. And so seeing that praise has been quite nice to see. But no, I love them all for different reasons. So the Calvados, I'm excited to see what people think. I hope they like it as much as I do.
And it sounds so exciting, but you said it. It's also a bit of a pressure, right? Because you have to match expectations on many levels in the company, for the customers, for yourself, of course. So it's not as easy as it sometimes sounds.
Yeah, I guess some of the humbling I guess I've had as being a blender. And I remember when I was working with our previous master blender, Lord McKillop, who I kind of then took over the reins from, is thinking about whiskey, not just the whiskey that I like. The good news is I have quite a broad and kind of varied palate when it comes to whiskey. I enjoy lots of flavors and styles. But yeah, as a blender, your job isn't to make whiskey for you, it's to make whiskey for everybody else. And yeah, I guess the nice part about being a brand that's a little under the radar, and again, I don't mean that as a negative, really, but we're still a whiskey that people are getting to know. I think that our reputation is good, and I'm very proud of what we've achieved with Glencadam, but it's still not a household name. It's not a whiskey that every whiskey drinker knows. I'd love to know a poll of the people listening who've heard of Glencadam before, because again, hopefully now you know it, but it's a really cool distillery with a really cool history and amazing liquid. But all of that is based on the liquid itself. So my point of this is that we won't release something unless we think it's great, and we have to think it's worth releasing. We're not a brand that sells purely on being a name. So if we're going to do a finish or we're going to do a new release, we only do that when we think it's singing. We don't just release a whiskey for the sake of it. And I'm not saying that other companies do as such. But for us, it's not like, oh yeah, let's make a new story about this and then we'll make a whiskey for it. It's the other way around. It's, oh, we've got this really good whiskey. What are we going to call it? So yeah, so there's a pressure there. But thankfully, fingers crossed, or touch wood anyway, people have enjoyed what I've done so far. So I'll try and keep it coming.
And let's quickly talk about something that we've seen in the tasting room, something that you have not created, but someone many, many years ago. Like, there's something that is called Viking whiskey. So yeah. What's that? How old is that?
So I'm trying to remember the exact date, but that is a Glencadam from the 1920s. It's the oldest Glencadam we've seen or is on record.
Over 100 years ago.
It was found in someone's house. I think it was in Brooklyn or over in the States. And it came up for auction. And it literally says on the label copy, Glencadam 6-year-old. So it's the old Glencadam has been part of Royal Blend, which was made in the 1890s. It's been part of blended whiskies since its inception. So it's had a history of it in parts in blended whiskey. But as a single malt, that is the oldest bottle of Glencadam that we've ever seen. And yeah, we've not opened it, but I really want to. there's only one. I've never seen another. And every time I look at that bottle, I kind of just think like, wow, the history of that. Just to even understand what it is would be really cool. I'd love to see how similar it is to the spirit today. Yeah. But it is the oldest Glencadam in existence.
You also told us if you could try, you'd love to recreate it.
Yeah, I think if given the opportunity, I would love to try and recreate that. I think as a spirit and as a style, I think, like I say, I would love to know how it tastes now compared to Glencadam of today. But I'd also love to, I guess it's just as a blending challenge, I'd love to see if it was possible to recreate a whiskey style from the 1920s using whiskey of today. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of thing. So in blending, often we'll be given whiskeys to try and sample match. And I really enjoy that side of the job. So we'll be given a sample and said, look, can you guys make this using your whiskeys? We don't get any information on it. And I effectively have to taste it, analyze it, and then try and recreate it using our stocks. And I really enjoy that as a job. I'm a really keen chef as well, or cook. I'm not a professional chef. but I love food and I love flavor. And I enjoy tasting things in a restaurant that I love and then going home and trying to make it. And I don't ask for recipes. I like to try which is maybe pretty geeky. but I like to taste things and try and understand where those flavors came from and then try and recreate those flavors.
No, I love that too. When it comes to cooking, whiskey blending, I don't know, but...
Yeah, it's the challenge of going, oh, that's really good. How did they do that? And then figuring out. And blending is the same. So I enjoy those projects a lot when it's almost like a blind tasting, but you have to then try and recreate that blind tasting.
Yeah, and now, well, we don't know if the guys will let you open that bottle to recreate it or not. But if not, what else can we expect from Glencadam in the future?
So there's a bit of variety, really. So Glencadam we have one cask of the oldest ever Glencadam. I know, obviously, the 1920s bottling the Viking one is the oldest bottle in existence. But we do have our oldest cask of Glencadam, which is pretty much good to bottle. And that's pretty special. I can't tell you how old it is yet because it's not been released. But it's significant. and it's the oldest cask we have. We have one cask of it. There's just over 100 litres of it in that barrel. Or should I say hogshead? but it's pretty beautiful. It's just absolutely singing. And again, I was talking about old spirits not necessarily being the best. They're all lovely in their own right, but generally older whiskies can become quite extractive. They can put wood forward, which is lovely if you like that style. But the reason I love this particular Glencadam so much is because the wood hasn't really overtaken the spirit. It's had many decades of slow aging, and it's just come to this really lovely sweet spot where you can still really taste the spirit character, but also it's just this wonderful kind of maturation, oxidation sort of style.
We'll keep our eyes open then.
It's cool. I'm sure it won't be a Tuesday night dram. I'm sure it'll be a little bit more expensive than maybe a standard in front of the TV whiskey. But it's pretty exciting. And there's also, I think there's three new cask types that I've never worked with before that are all coming to maturity now as well. So there should hopefully be a couple of new cask finishes, older cask finishes coming out in the Glencadam range, either in the next kind of 12 months, maybe 18 months.
Sounds pretty exciting. So we'll keep our eyes open.
Please do.
What we usually do is that we finish our podcasts with three quick questions. So I hope you're ready for that.
Sounds good.
Here's the first one. Who's your role model in the whiskey world?
Ooh. Sorry, I'm not giving you a quick answer here. I'm trying to think. Do you know that one of the most influential people I met in the whiskey world was Bill Lumsden. I went there on a whiskey trip when I was working in retail. And I remember being really... enthused, almost infectious with his kind of enthusiasm and love for whiskey. I like to think that hopefully I emanate a bit of that, but he was the first master blender I'd met. I think his passion was really, really clear from an early age, and he really got me to fall in love with it. I mean, there's been lots of really great people that I've met, but I think he's definitely one of them.
I can see that.
Then, maybe a bit of an easier question. What's the best whiskey cocktail to make with Glencadam?
Ooh. So I love whiskey cocktails, but with Glencadam, I mean, this is going to sound biased, but it's probably it's a serve that I've done a lot, and it's we call it a green cadam, and effectively it's a Glencadam gimlet. So it's Glencadam 10-year-old. I can give exact measures if you want. So it's about 60 ml of Glencadam 10-year-old, 30 ml of lime juice, and 20 ml of simple syrup, and about 5 or 6 basil leaves, and you muddle it all together, then add some ice, give it a bit of a shake, and strain it into glass, and it's brilliant. It's whiskey forward. It does the Glencadam spirit justice, which I think any whiskey cocktail with a good quality whiskey, you should be able to taste the whiskey in that cocktail, not just the cocktail itself. It's fresh, crisp, and really does the spirit justice.
Sounds good.
So looking ahead, decades from now, a lot of people will taste a whiskey that actually is shaped by your decision today. So if you could talk to them, or if they had to say what they recognize about especially your fingerprint in the whiskey we produce today, what do you hope they would say?
I think the style I try to create with whiskey is balance and equilibrium. So if there's big flavors, I want that to be tempered with structure and finesse. That sounds very wishy-washy, but what I mean by that is so as a wine guy, I love wines that deliver an all-rounded experience. So if it's going to be big and it's going to be sweet, then it should also have a bit of bitterness there to tone back the sweetness. If it's going to be elegant, it should have some kind of underpinning body so that it's not lost. And you'll find with a lot of our whiskies, if they're big and rich flavor finishes in terms of the cask type chosen, then I like the finish of the whiskey to be dry. So if it's a really big mouthfeel, then I like it to finish on like a dark chocolate or a coffee note. So I think, balance is something I really seek to do in blending. And it's something I kind of, strive to aim for. So I like whiskies that give you a journey, but are balanced. So I don't like anything that's overly weighted in one direction. I like them to kind of to have a bit of a journey, but taper off in a really nice rounded way.
Sounds really nice. And I think we could continue talking for hours, but we have to stop at some point in time. And so we've got a lot of insights from you. Thank you very much, Ian.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
No, it's been a pleasure for us. And if you want to get to know more about Glencadam, follow them on social media at Glencadam Whiskey, visit their website at glencadam.com, or visit Ian and the team here in Brecon, not Bracken.
Well said.
So we are Miriam and Manuel, and this was Inside Whiskey with Ian Fourteeth at Glencadam Distillery.
Thank you very
much. Thank
you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Barrel Talk today. If you enjoyed this episode, tune in again next time for some more tales about the water of life. And in the meantime, follow us on Instagram at @inside_whiskey, on Facebook at @InsideWhiskey The Barrel Talk, or visit our website on insidewhiskey.de. This was Inside Whiskey, The Barrel Talk.